Whether you drive a car,
need a car,
or just occasionally bum a ride with friends,
you've come to the right place.
Join Jill and Tom as they break down everything that's going on in the auto world.
New car reviews,
shopping tips,
driving green,
electric cars,
classic cars,
and plenty of great guests.
This is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast.
All right, this is the Car Stuff Podcast. I'm Tom, she is Jill. Thank you for joining us this week. When you have a chance, check us out at consumerguide.com. Everything's there. All the cool stuff. The podcast is there. You can stream it there, but you really should just subscribe, download, subscribe, and leave us reviews, especially
yes.
at Apple.
Yes.
That voice is Jill Simonello, managing editor of Pickup Truck Plus SUV Talk, North American Car of the Year juror, and some sort of freelancer.
Some sort.
And you got sick. Last week, you warned me about getting sick.
Yeah.
But you got sick.
I did.
I didn't.
No, good. I'm glad I did not share. Because, by the way, like, I got home on Monday, and I was essentially out for the count.
Wow.
Yeah, I didn't start feeling better probably until about Saturday.
And then you didn't get to the auto show until Sunday,
mm-hmm.
this past Sunday, for the miles per hour run,
mm-hmm.
sponsored by Toyota.
Yep.
Which is cool. Thank you, Toyota. For that. Was that fun?
It was. So, you know, I want to give you a little bit of a backstory here, because this is like...
Okay, it's about running, so not much of a backstory.
Not much of a backstory.
Clock is running.
Clock is running. So, I actually helped create this run, which is why I had to do it. And the genesis of it is Dave Sloan, who is the former president
yeah.
of the Chicago Auto Show, told me once that he used to run the show floor before it opened every morning.
Which is cool.
It's really cool. And so I was like, there's...
He's crazy.
He's a Boston marathoner. He's certifiably crazy.
He's the real deal, yeah.
And fast. And so he told me this, and I was like, there's something here. What we should do, an indoor race that, you know, kind of... is in the Chicago Auto Show. People could run the floor. And then I joined the board of directors for the Chicago Area Runners Association. I was like, oh, Chicago Area Runners Association, meet the Chicago Auto Show. Have a conversation. So they started talking about it. And the problem with doing a race before the show opens is, like, you're always going to have a straggler. You know, somebody's going to do a 5K in 3 hours, you know? And so they're like, okay, let's do this race called Miles Per Hour. And whoever can run the most miles in an hour... wins. So the race is a finite amount of time. It's 1 hour. It's 60 minutes long. And you have to run as far as you can in that time. And whoever runs the most miles wins.
And then you guys shower in a maintenance closet.
We do.
And then you can walk the floor.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you're already there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's
a good use of time and space.
It was really cool. And so it, like, starts at 8, ends at 9. And then the people who participate in the race have a full hour to walk the show floor before it opens to the public. And so it's kind of funny because, like, I was there until 10 when it opened to the public. And I remember looking out at the lines of people who are just staring at you, waiting to get in. And they're very jealous because you have access and they don't.
And the final runners, every one of them left there, picked up a 6-pack of Michelob Ultra, and then went home Sunday to watch pregame.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly that. But no, so it was really cool. I ended up doing about 5.5 miles in my hour. And yeah.
Wearing donut tights. Yeah.
Picture on Facebook.
Yeah. We need to get you a Car Stuff Podcast t-shirt.
You know what? Or hat or something.
I need to decide which.
We need swag.
Yeah. I'm in a position now where I want to do that.
Okay.
So something, and we can give a few away.
Yeah.
Yeah, cool. Well,
like
congrats
that.
On that. Congrats to the Chicago Auto Show.
Mm-hmm.
I hear it's a good show. You did check it out.
I did. So then after the show was over, I walked the floor, and it looks amazing. It looks great.
Let's talk about one of the cars on the show floor that won't be there next year.
Okay.
Did you hear this?
Maybe.
Chevrolet Blazer.
Oh, okay.
Being
no,
discontinued.
I did not. Okay.
Chevrolet has not confirmed this yet, but a couple of sources, including GM Authority.
Okay.
Website, fan site, they're pretty good with their information.
Okay.
So, yeah, it's looking like the Blazer's going away. Which is interesting because other makers would kill to sell this many vehicles. They
mm-hmm.
sold 60,000 of them last year.
It's a great car.
Not a lot for a midsize crossover, though. And they sold about 120,000 Traverses.
Right.
So clearly the 3-row version of that vehicle is the bigger seller. And it's
yeah.
going to be an even bigger seller now because Blazer's going away.
Blazer's going away.
I like the Blazer.
Yeah.
You know who didn't like it?
Who?
Jennifer at cars.com.
Oh.
Yeah, for a bunch of really good reasons, actually.
Okay.
Closest I ever came to arguing with her. But, Jennifer Newman. Because Chevy used to do weird stuff with price points, and there were things you couldn't get, like safety equipment at certain trim levels.
Oh, no, that annoys the snot out of me.
Yeah, so I get what she was doing, but I really like driving that car.
Yeah.
Anyway, so there's that piece of noise. Let's see. Jill, you've been sick. Check.
Yes, check.
Check out the auto show. Check. Oh, just so people know, this is episode 261.
Okay.
Last time you and I spoke was episode 259. In between.
Okay.
Bonus episode.
Okay.
My drive with Robert Colangelo of the 2025 Toyota Camry XLE all-wheel drive.
Okay.
5 minutes. People should give it a listen.
Okay. Then I am not as behind as I thought I was.
No.
Okay.
But it's a real tight 5 minutes.
Okay.
His editor's really good, so we got that done. But that's hanging out there, and it's a quick listen, and it's pretty informative.
Okay.
Not super informative.
Just kind of.
Yeah, because I babble.
Well, you do.
Yeah.
You're a babbler.
All right, that's done. Tariffs. Last time we talked, there was a lot of confusion.
And still.
There's still a lot of confusion.
Still confusion.
But the tariffs have not yet put in place. There's some China stuff.
Yeah.
Which will hobble the auto industry to some extent because there are parts that are supplied from China. But they can probably be replaced more easily than, you know, transmissions.
Right.
But the thing that did come down, unfortunately, and we knew this was going to happen, is that all of the NEVI deal has been struck down by Donald Trump, though it is not yet clear if he can strike that down.
Right.
Because it was an act of Congress. But the National Electric Vehicle Infrastructure Act, which was part of the Inflation Reduction Act, had allocated 5 billion big ones to charging infrastructure.
Right.
And part of that deal was that each state was supposed to submit a plan before they got money to install chargers at least every 50 miles along the interstates in their states.
Okay.
So most of that money has been allocated now. And I don't know what can be stopped, even if it can be stopped.
Yeah. So it's just interesting times. And, you know, I often argue that there is not a range problem with vehicles. There's an infrastructure problem. Because if you have enough, like, charging stations along highways, like, okay, you stop, you charge up for 5 minutes, and then you're on your way.
I worked with a guy who said exactly the same thing.
Yeah.
If you can charge easily and quickly, there's no issue.
Yeah.
Because you can buy gas anywhere.
Yeah, exactly. So if this infrastructure deal gets put, you know, on hold, and people aren't building the infrastructure like we hoped they would, this could set back electric vehicle sales, I think, by 4, 5, 10 years.
It could. And there is one organization out there that may change this, and they need to talk about it more, and that's IONA.
Yeah. You know what? We need to try and get somebody from IONA on.
That's a great idea.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's try and do that. IONA, for people who don't know, is BMW, General Motors, Honda, Hyundai, Kia, Mercedes-Benz, Stellantis, and Toyota, which is way more than half the vehicles by volume out there, plan to install. This is a non-for-profit organization. Mm-hmm. It's owned by these manufacturers in cooperative effort. 30,000 charging ports, not stations, but ports. By 2030.
Yeah.
So that can pick up a lot of the slack here.
Yeah.
But we don't know how much slack there is.
Right. I think there's a lot of slack.
I don't know. I don't know how much money we're going to lose, because some of this money's already been spent.
Right.
Most of the money's been transferred to the states.
Right.
They're not going to give it back.
That is true. That is true. You know, and the thing that could throw a wrench in all of this is, you know, one thing we don't want to do is we don't want people to lose jobs. And if people have already been earmarked to do a job with this money, and all of a sudden it gets rescinded or transferred to a different department, what happens to those jobs?
That's a great question. Because this gets a little weird. For people who don't know, the NEVI money was going to the states, but the states were going to send that money to contractors.
Right.
States do not install these things themselves. And those contractors, we know, unfortunately, they are the brands that we have some trouble with, EVgo, ChargePoint, and I think Electrify America, and I think even Tesla is building stations using NEVI money. So there's two types of jobs there. There are the jobs building these things and installing them, and then there are the jobs maintaining these things after the fact. So yeah, you don't want to lose those. And there's probably people getting excited about their jobs. So all right, this next piece of news is surprising because it should have never gotten this far.
Okay.
The Honda Nissan thing. Which was going to be a merger, and there was lots of handshaking and hugging, and it was going to be great.
Yeah.
Ain't going to happen.
Yeah, that was like the biggest news of last year on the last day of the year.
Yeah, it was huge. And I said that. Mm-hmm. I was like, Tom, recap the year. And I'd be like, well, this Honda Nissan thing's big. Here's the thing about that being big. It should never have gotten this far because Honda intended for Nissan to be a subsidiary of Honda. Mm. And Nissan's like, wait, no, we're
hold on, player.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're independent. I thought we were merging. Here's the deal with that. We keep hearing about scale and how smaller companies are going to have a hard time moving forward, especially with electrification. Honda's not that small. It seems small. And for years, it was kind of small. Mm-hmm. They sell about 4 million cars a year. They're not dramatically smaller than General Motors, actually. And they have a capitalized value of $50 billion. Mm. Nissan sells 1 million fewer cars, and investors don't like Nissan very much. They have a cap value of $10 billion. So you can see how going into this, Honda's like, we're not equals.
Right. So yeah.
I guess they're taking a break. They're taking a breather. And then they're going to talk about what they're going to do to merge or join forces or whatever.
Collaborate.
Yeah. Also, wasn't there like a GM Hyundai thing we were talking about for a minute? They haven't gotten back to us. There's been no news.
Yeah, no news.
No news. But that one sort of kind of works because Hyundai's really far ahead in electrics.
Right.
And GM really knows how to build big trucks. So that could be something.
Yeah.
All right. I've been babbling. We talked about the Blazer.
Mm-hmm.
So you, just this week.
Last week.
Last week drove.
2 weeks ago.
No, it was last week.
No, 2 weeks ago.
You drove the Lexus LX 700H.
Right.
Now, the 600 came out like a 2022?
I think so.
Yeah. So, the LX is their big luxury car, and it used to be the analog for the Land Cruiser, which it's not directly anymore. It's still the same platform architecture and stuff, but it's slightly different and way upscale price-wise.
Yes.
So, what's the big... What makes the 700H different than the 600?
It's got a hybrid powertrain.
Okay.
And, so what's really interesting about the LX, and it's funny, and one of my, I got into a bit of a shouting match with somebody on my TikTok channel because I called it the largest SUV. And they're like, it's not the largest. The TX is the largest. And I was like, okay, but the LX weighs like X amount of more. You know, it's large. I didn't say it was the longest. I said it was the largest. And he's like, that's not the same. And I was like, okay, if somebody who's my height was standing next to me and they weighed 100 pounds more than me, she would be larger than me. That's not the same. And I'm like, okay. So I like stop the argument. So I'm just going to say it's a large three-row SUV. It's not longer than the TX, but it is heavier. And
with a much more useful three-row than the previous generation.
Yeah. Than the previous generation, I will say yes.
Yeah.
Useful third row in that vehicle. That's beauty in the eye of the beholder.
Well, that's the thing, though. People buy three-row crossovers that don't have especially useful third rows, just in case.
As a just in case. And this is definitely one of those.
Yeah.
And, the interesting thing and the thing that I think differentiates the LX from the TX is, you know, the TX is definitely a family hauler, whereas the LX is more of a luxury off-roader.
Yeah, for people who don't know, the TX is really the Grand Highlander.
Yeah.
It's with a more useful third row. It's a larger family vehicle. Also with absolutely no pretense of being off-road ready.
Yeah.
No. Which the LX has.
Yes.
Some pretense and some equipment.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so like the very first thing that we did in the LX is they took us to an off-road course. And it was a small off-road course, but it was very well designed to showcase and highlight, you know, the capability of this vehicle. There were like logs that we crawled over. There was like a rock crawl. There was some off camber, situations that you had to drive through. And it was probably maybe a quarter mile loop. It was very small. But I went through the first time and you've got like central lockers, front lockers, rear lockers, you've got lockers. And I went through and I left, like I put it in off-road mode and I did four wheel low and just kind of drove through on my own. And then the next time I went through, I started turning off, you know, some of the lockers. And then I was just like, oh my gosh. And like we went through this rock crawl area that was like, dum, 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 dum. And I felt like I was driving almost on a highway. It was so smooth and so like seamless. I was very impressed. And then the next time I went through, they have something on there. It's called crawl mode. And it's essentially like low speed cruise control for off-road situations.
It keeps it without throttle. It'll keep you moving at a very slow,
consistent
steady speed. And you select that speed,
you
right?
You do.
Up to what? Like,
I'm maybe like 5 miles an hour.
Yeah, that makes
and,
sense.
And so I had it on like level two. And so I think that was like 2 or 3 miles per hour. I set it and did the whole course without feet on the throttle or brake or anything, and the vehicle just like pulled me through the course. It was so impressive.
Toyota products that are supposed to do well off-road do well off-road.
Oh, yeah.
Historically, they've been fantastic. We should talk about lockers real quick since you brought it up.
Mm-hmm.
But lockers are essentially axles or a differential that there's no slip once they're engaged. So in the back, most cars, and this helps with turning, the wheels on the rear axle can turn independently of each other. When you lock them up, they turn at the same speed, and it's a huge boon for traction, but it's really useless at any speed.
Yep.
So you want not to be in that. So that's rear, and then center is the differential, which means that torque is being sent evenly front and rear, and then rear on a lot of vehicles is a front locker. It's very rare. And to be able to select those manually is cool.
It is super cool.
You may not be good at deciding when to do it, but it's cool to just have the switches and choose
and
stuff.
And just, I'm going to press this button and see what happens today.
Because I'm an off-roader.
Yeah, because I'm an off-roader. But, I mean, it did exceptionally well no matter what button I pushed. And it has the cameras so that you can see your tires. And then the, kind of what's underneath the vehicle. And it just, off-road, it was really good. And then the impressive thing is, you take it on-road, and it's just as good, just as comfortable. And I don't know. I walked away with very favorable impressions of the LX.
Okay, I forgot to write down a number here.
Okay.
It looks like EPA numbers are not yet available for the 700H. But you go from the twin-turbo 3.4, 409 horsepower, to more horsepower, but I don't remember the more horsepower number. But that is the same engine, basically hybridized.
Yes.
And not really same, because you modify things to be hybrid, but there you go. And these engines are actually the iForce and iForce Max from other Toyota stuff.
Yep.
They don't use those terms for Lexus, right?
No, they do not. And
just like Lincoln doesn't use EcoBoost.
Right. And one of the interesting things, and I would have to dig into my notes to be really granularly specific, but one of the things they said about this vehicle that is unique with the hybrid powertrain is it has a fail-safe. So if something goes wrong with the hybrid powertrain, you can go all it, like, it won't shut down the entire vehicle. Like, I know some hybrids, like, if something is going on with the hybrid powertrain, and the electrical system is not working, then the entire vehicle goes kaput, and that will not happen with this vehicle.
I seem to recall, I'm going to go way off topic here for a moment, but there was a period of time not very long ago where every cab in Chicago was either a Prius or a Camry hybrid.
Yeah.
And cabbies really liked those vehicles for a bunch of reasons. And one was they didn't require maintenance.
Mm-hmm.
And I just assume the hybrid systems on those things failed eventually, because that's a rough life.
Yeah.
These vehicles were getting towards the end of their life anyway, shoved into taxi cab business. But if the battery fails, I believe they run anyway. You're just not in hybrid.
Yeah. Basically. But I mean, this has a very specific fail-safe.
Interesting.
I would have to like dig into my notes to like recall exactly what that is. But I just thought it was fascinating, because here's the thing about the Lexus LX 700H is these vehicles are very popular in the Middle East, overseas, where you're going to be driving through a desert.
Part of the reason we have them.
Yeah.
Because that volume.
Yeah.
Help make the business case for selling them at all.
Yeah. And so, like, if you're driving in the middle of the desert, like, the last thing you wanted to do when you don't have cell service is for the vehicle to die.
Yeah. So, okay, we're running out of time here, but real quick, it looks like they moved the ultra luxury trim level to just the 700.
Yeah, I think that sounds correct.
And that's big money.
It is big. They are all big money. I think they all start more than $100,000.
They do. That one's $141,000. And now the Overtrail has been moved only to hybrid.
Yeah.
And tell us about the Overtrail. That's just the more off-road ready.
Yes.
That's the word I was looking for.
I mean, I would say it's kind of the equivalent to the Trail Hunter in the Toyota lineup.
The cabin smells better.
Yeah, a lot better. And you get a cool box in the...
And by that, I meant leather.
Yeah. Well, and you get a cool box in the center console area. And that's, I think that's standard across all of them.
There is no Toyota with a bad smelling interior. I now regret having said that.
Yeah, no, actually, I feel like the Toyota Highlander many moons ago, the base trim did not smell good.
I ever tell you this story? When I sold cars at Ford, 1991, we would take deliver, I believe, I can't remember then if it was the Aspire or the Festiva, but the car that was coming out of Korea, that their small car. And they would. I was working there for. I worked there for 2 quarters before I was fired for being a lousy salesman. and as a low man on the totem pole, I sometimes had to go out to the trucks and check in the cars. And we get a weird batch of cars. And the probe was on there, the Ford probe, which, by the way, is a Mazda. It smelled different than all the other cars. It was built in Flat Rock. And all the Fords smelled the same. And on hot days, that smell could be overwhelming. But dang, and I can't remember if it was the Aspire or the Festiva. It was built for them by Kia at the time.
Okay.
That smelled bad. That smelled like someone took turpentine and just poured all over the inside of the car. It was impossible to sit in there when it was hot.
Okay.
And everything's still wrapped in plastic and stuff. And it was just built, and the carpet, you know, was brand new and all that. It's just a terrible smell.
Okay.
So if you go back in time, do not sell Fords.
That's
the moral of my story.
Got it. Okay.
And be the low man on the totem pole.
Okay.
All right, we need to take a break here. After the break, we talk with TJ Campbell. He's the information and testing manager at the Tire Rack.
Yes.
He's been with us before.
Yes.
And he's talking a little bit about off-road tires.
Yes.
And then I have a question for him he doesn't know about, unrelated to off-road tires.
Oh.
All right, we'll be right back.
Okay.
Questions or comments?
Drop us a line at carstuff@consumerguide.com.
That's carstuff@consumerguide.com.
Did you know the Chicago Auto Show offers much more than just cars? Every year there's something new to experience, and 2025 is no different. This year, take a thrilling ride on one of two indoor mountain climbs with either Ford or Jeep, and decide who conquers the challenge best. Come experience the latest electrified vehicles on two indoor tracks where you'll feel the power and performance. Take a trip into the national parks and adopt a dog with Subaru. Dream about a lavish lifestyle at the Supercar Gallery. Get behind the wheel to test drive vehicles on city streets. And don't miss new exhibits at the show like Overlanding Chicago or the Family Zone. Join us for an indoor run, craft beer tasting, career day, and so much more. It's an experience you won't forget. The Chicago Auto Show, February 8th through the 17th at McCormick Place. Find out more and buy tickets online at chicagoautoshow.com. The Chicago Auto Show. We'll see you there.
Welcome back to the Car Stuff Podcast.
All right, we're back. This is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast. I'm Tom. She is Jill. Jill, how's it going?
Wow, this is actually the first time I think you've asked me that today. It's
going
well.
Yeah, so I can ask it a few more times.
You can. I'm feeling a lot better today.
Yeah, you were sick.
I was.
Now you're not sick.
Now I'm not. Well, I mean, I still have a cough, but
don't tell me that.
I think it's more because I have asthma. I'm going to have a cough for like a couple weeks.
It used to be for years and years and years, I would get really sick right around this time of year. And it didn't happen. It hasn't happened in the last couple of years.
Okay, so fingers crossed.
Yep.
I'm not sharing.
No, I think I'm good.
Okay, good.
Oh, I think I skipped it. What was I going to say? Oh, yeah, help me out here.
You want to talk about social media?
Not really, but yeah. Yeah, I'm on X.
Okay.
Talking about cars, and I am on Blue Sky now talking about cars.
Okay.
And I'm enjoying. Hey, folks, I'm enjoying the Blue Sky folks a lot.
Yeah, you know what? I actually am really enjoying Blue Sky as well because people actually talk about cars.
Serious car guys.
Yeah.
And here's the thing. I've talked about this, and I'll keep talking about it because I'm a guy of habit. But Adam 12, great car pictures,
great
and I take
pictures
of the screen.
People, because that's what everybody wants to see, is you taking pictures of a screen.
Okay, those are the posts people respond to.
Okay.
Even more, I have not yet posted a car that someone couldn't identify.
All right.
So, there you have it.
Okay.
All right. On the phone with us, I think for the third time,
yeah, that's right,
is TJ Campbell, the information and testing manager at the Tire Rack. TJ, how are you?
I'm doing well, and I think you're right. It does feel like the third time, and I'm happy to be back.
Well, Happy New Year, sir.
Hey, thanks. Happy New Year to you, too.
For people who don't know, tell us about the Tire Rack and your cool job there.
Oh, absolutely. Well, Tire Rack, we are the largest online retailer of tires, wheels, brakes, suspension. So, of course, we are a handy and convenient place to buy tires, But the, you know, the part that I'm more excited about, what I do there, is we are also the leading source or one of the leading sources of tire testing information for consumers. We evaluate, the goal is to evaluate every product that we carry on the road, in the wet, in the dry, for non-summer tires, on the ice and in the snow as well. So we tell people how these tires perform. We cut through all of the marketing hype, the fluff, the nonsense out there about which tire is better or worse, and we use real objective and professional subjective evaluation, and then provide that information to anybody that wants it on the internet for free to help consumers, to help drivers make the right decision to get the right tire for them, for their priorities, based on what they drive, how they drive it, and where they're located.
Now, there's one new additional reason why people should check out the Tire Rack, and I don't know if you know this, TJ, but local tire stores no longer have tire displays. The reason you would go to a tire store was to see the tires, even though you didn't know what they meant. I don't know the difference between a Sipe and a Tread and whatever, but but it was cool to look at tires, and now you can't see them. So why wouldn't you shop online? There's no reason to go to a store.
Sure, and we have all kinds of high-quality photos of every tire that we carry. All those pictures are taken here in-house.
Oh,
so
cool.
It's the same angle, the same photo studio, the same everything every time, so you can compare them reasonably, you know, as well as you could. I mean, I suppose you couldn't touch and smell them, but other than that, you can compare them as well as you could in the brick-and-mortar tire shops.
I worked at a store in the 80s. I worked at a gas station, a service station that stocked Goodyears, and this is going to sound crazy, but Goodyear smelled good.
Okay.
Every tire has a distinct smell. Different tire manufacturers, some of them more so than others, and of course there are exceptions, but in general, you can identify a tire brand based on its smell.
We were just talking about cars that you could do that with, and now tires.
Yeah.
I don't think I could identify any tire but a Goodyear, but...
All right,
So TJ, you guys just produced a series of videos, one of which is about off-road tires. Tell us a little bit about that.
Absolutely. Our big initiative this year. We made these big changes to our testing program, more tires involved in every test, dedicated test platforms for each segment. So when people watch these videos, it's more, hey, that vehicle that you're testing with looks a lot like what I drive, so it's more relatable. And yes, one of the vehicles that we added to our test fleet is a new Toyota Tacoma.
Saw it.
Bright orange. Beautiful.
Yeah.
Yep, absolutely. You can't miss it. And, yeah, we tested a large group of all-terrain tires. And all-terrain is such an interesting segment because, you know, of course, in the U.S. we sell a bazillion trucks and then a bazillion SUVs. And a lot of them, you know, people want a tire that looks rugged or is rugged or maybe is really good at off-road, or maybe just, you know, the worst that they face is the wet grass at the soccer field or, you know, everything in between.
Right, the gravel road.
And, you know, yeah, sure. Yeah, maybe you drive 99% of your everyday driving is on paved roads, but the last mile to your driveway is, a service road, a gravel road, just unpaved or whatever the case may be. And so you don't need that real super heavy-duty off-road, but you need something maybe, or you want something that's a little bit more durable, gets a little bit better traction in those kinds of conditions, and there are all-terrain tires for that. But then there are the people that I go rock crawling on the weekends. I'm in the mud pits. I'm out on the farm or the ranch or whatever the case may be, and that type of tire can be classified as all-terrain as well. So it's this huge, nebulous category that has no real definition, you know, no technical definition. Like so many things in the tire world, there's no, like, written standard for what makes a tire an all-terrain tire.
But you guys tried, right? Because watching the video, you guys divided up the market to on-road all-terrain, off-road all-terrain, and rugged all-terrain.
Yes. And we also have commercial all-terrain, which weren't included in that test.
Okay.
But yes, you're correct. And we, you know, as the all-terrain category just kept growing and growing and growing, and we had just, I think, 2 or 3 years ago, the tires that I just described, you know, the ones that are for, you know, 10% off-road or the ones that could be like real serious off-road tires, those were all under the same umbrella of a category. And it just kept growing, and it got to the point where it's so, you know, unwieldy. And we said, we need to come up with a way to separate these things out for consumers so we can better differentiate. We can better get you into the right category so you're looking at the right group of tires and you're not completely overwhelmed. And so that's what we've done. You know, as the names imply, those on-road all-terrain tires, those are the ones that, yeah, it's still for vehicles that the vast majority of their lives are spent on-road or even entirely on-road, and maybe you just want a slightly more rugged appearance. A lot of the tires in that category, their sizing is specifically for, you know, primarily CUVs, unibody CUVs. And then there are others that have mostly truck sizes, but they're also just, you know, that little modicum of additional off-road traction because you need it for, again, you know, whatever your use case is that requires very minor off-road use. And then we have our off-road all-terrain category, which is kind of stepping up in aggressiveness, in off-road capability, those sorts of things. And that is more of a pure mix of off-road and on-road. And of course, like all things, there is a range. You know, the milder off-road tires are kind of close to on-road, and the more extreme off-road all-terrain tires are kind of close there to the rugged all-terrain. But those are, you know, kind of the true dual-purpose tires. And then you get into the rugged all-terrain, which that's a category that has recently emerged, and we're seeing more and more entries into that place in the market. And they are, you know, ostensibly a step between off-road all-terrain and true MT tires, off-road max traction or mud tires, you know, whatever terminology you use for them. These RT tires are supposed to be a step between those two. But the interesting part about this is there have been multiple tire manufacturers that have kind of come out and just openly stated a lot of those tires are kind of cosmetic only, meant to give you that look, but not necessarily that, you know, that off-road performance.
Yeah.
Correct. Yes.
I mean, I was going to ask, like, you talk about this really kind of extreme rugged category. Like, what kinds of vehicles are getting those, like, from stock factory? Like, you buy the vehicle, you get those tires.
There aren't a whole lot that have that type of product from the factory. They are the upgraded, you know, off-road package type trucks a lot of times. The Bison package the Chevy. There's, you know, the Raptor has a BF Goodrich, which we classify as an off-road all-terrain, but it's one of the more aggressive off-road all-terrain products. So it's kind of close to that realm, but it's not there. Most of these type products are fit aftermarket. They're people that are lifting their vehicles, putting, you know, big low offset wheels on them, and then throwing these kinds of tires on them. So you don't see a whole lot of them. I think the Sasquatch package for the Bronco comes with what they call an MT tire, but we classify it as an RT tire.
Okay.
But those are the ones that kind of, you know, come top of mind.
So where do you place somebody with something pretty high volume but with some off-road pretense, like the Silverado with the Z71 package? What kind of tires would you guys recommend to someone looking to upgrade from there?
Well, you know, I mean, we would ask them what their actual use case is. That is a huge part of, you know, when you call in and you talk to somebody on the phone here, or even if you're utilizing the website, our website, to its full potential, the goal is to get as much information from the consumer about what their priorities are, how they're using their vehicle, that sort of thing, in order to steer them to the right category. Because, I mean, let's be honest, not everybody with the off-road package even sees off pavement.
Right.
It's not just a vehicle, you know, factor in the equation. It's a use case factor in the equation. So we'd really want to know what the person, you know, what do you want from your tires? What are you doing with your tires? And that would help steer them in the right direction.
So let's say I drive through drive-thrus a lot to get a Diet Coke, and then I occasionally crawl over a pile of snow in a parking lot to annoy my wife.
Do you go on the curb is the other question.
Yeah, right. If you're striking the curbs, then yeah, maybe something all terrain would be right for you.
With a lot of sidewall
that you have there. Yeah, absolutely.
That is a crazy thing now. Is that there's no sidewall, so wheels are just so vulnerable.
Yeah.
Yeah, especially on anything with any kind of performance pretenses. You know, I mean, and not even cars. You know, but some, you know, the M package or AMGs or SQs. Mm-hmm. You know, they have very little section height these days, and usually 21-inch wheels. So there's plenty of wheel there to come into contact with whatever it is.
Scrape and scuff up. So one of the things that I find with off-road tires, I'm in and out of a lot of different vehicles, and they have varying degrees of, off-road rugged tires. And, you know, they're great for off-road, but then you go on-road and it's like thwap, 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 thwap. So I'm assuming like some of the testing you guys do,
Well, I don't know what the thwapping is.
It's just like the road noise coming into, like from the tire noise on it's just like the sound of the tire.
People need to see.
I think
see
we call that an onomatopoeia.
Yeah, thwap. But I'm assuming like some of the testing you're doing talks about how capable they are, but then how roadworthy they are as well.
Of course, and absolutely. I mean, with little exception, or with some exceptions, most of these tires are going to spend most of their time on the road.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, on-road comfort, noise, ride quality, even some steering and, light handling, those things are what you live with day in, day out. And unless it's a trailered, mud buggy, which in that instance, all terrain isn't the right category for you anyway. You should be in an MT tire if it's trailered. So presumably, every vehicle that these types of tires are installed on is a street-driven vehicle at some point. And most of them are street-driven vehicles, like I said, for the majority of their lives. So, yeah, this is what you have to deal with day in and day out. And we absolutely get customers that call in very regularly that are switching from an MT tire to something less aggressive because they thought that was going to be a good idea. They wanted the look.
Seemed like a good idea at the time.
Yeah, right, absolutely. And now they're happy that their tires have finally worn out so they can get into something that is a little bit more suitable for their particular usage case. And you know, that's something that any time we talk about all-terrain tires, we talked about it, sprinkle it in a little bit in the video. Anytime I do an interview like this, I kind of sprinkle it in a little bit because we don't want to hit people over the head with it. But the idea is think about the reality of how you actually use these, because most people that buy an MT probably only need an off-road or rugged. People that buy an off-road or rugged probably need an on-road, need, a literal need, as opposed to what they want. It's something that the wrong tire for what you're doing can really be detrimental to your experience, especially when you get into something like this, where, like Jill said, some of them are very loud. Some of them are
thwap,
very
thwap,
stiff.
Thwap, thwap, as I recall.
Yeah, right? And a lot of them, we incorporate our emergency lane change maneuver into our testing for non-performance tires. And a lot of the tires in this test really struggled to pass this emergency avoidance maneuver that we've incorporated. There are some of them that could never pass this test, which we tested, a month prior with highway tires, and almost all of them passed almost every time, we attempted it. So again, it's not a fear-mongering thing. I'm not saying, oh, these all-terrain tires are dangerous, but you are giving up something for that aggressive appearance. You're giving up more than just noise, comfort, and ride quality. There are some handling and some, let's call it buffer or margin in an emergency avoidance maneuver. So, cool. Like I said, it's important to really think about if this is what you need and how aggressive is it.
So you essentially tested like all of the tires, and I have to believe you came up with a winner.
Well, yeah. I mean, yeah. I mean, anytime you have a chart that shows anything, there's going to be something that's on the top and something that's not on the top, right? I mean, but yeah, it is. We take a combined score for the on-road portion of the evaluation, the wet traction. Not just wet traction, but our wet subjective evaluation, and then our dry subjective evaluation. And that is what, the average of those scores is the overall ranking for all the tires in the test. Absolutely.
So, what was the answer? What's the best all-around off-road tire?
Well, it's a use case situation.
I know, but they ranked it. I want to know the answer. I saw the answer. I want you to share the answer.
It's a Cooper product. The Cooper Discover Road Plus Trail AT was the tire that was the overall winner for the on-road component, for the summer component of our testing.
Interesting.
We did just get back 2 weeks ago from the winter component of our testing. So we also tested these tires on the ice and in the snow.
Mm-hmm.
Those haven't been published yet. Those results haven't been published yet. But that tire did okay in the snow as well.
Okay.
So
good to know.
It was close to the top overall after winter was added in, but that Fredestein Pinza AT, the tire that was second during the summer portion, it actually moved up to the top spot after we factored in winter. So it's like Tom said, it's a use case. It's a priorities. And of course, both of those are on-road all-terrain tires. So theoretically, if we were to test them in off-road conditions, they might not be the strongest out there.
Makes sense.
Again, it's such a huge and varied category with so many things that people use them for that it's all about what's most important to you.
TJ, how can people watch this video and check out more about the Tire Rack?
Well, you go to TireRack.com. We have an entire section dedicated to our test results. You can find that up at the heading. It's research and advice, and then our test results from the drop-down menu. You can also see each tire has its own product display page, with the description, pictures of the tires, all that. And the link to the test results is on each one of those pages each one of those pages for every tire that was featured in the test. And, of course, we have a YouTube channel. We're working to grow that, so
cool.
Absolutely go to the Tire Rack YouTube channel, subscribe, get all of our, testing updates sent to you or notifications of when we publish new stuff, because we test a wide variety of products, truck tires, crossover SUV, sports car performance tires, touring tires, the whole gamut. So if you have more than one vehicle in your garage, then there's a good chance that we test something for your entire fleet.
And I think you mentioned that people could actually call Tire Rack as well to actually talk about their use case.
Okay. Oh, absolutely.
Which is cool and rare these days.
Mm-hmm. Right, absolutely. And all of our sales team, they go through extensive training before they're allowed on the phone. They have this, continuing education training from manufacturers, from our team on our test results. So they are fully immersed in this. They're not, just somebody that's learning on the job kind of thing. They know their stuff, and they can absolutely guide you to, what the best tire for you is going to be.
Excellent. TJ, thank you so much for your time today.
You are so welcome. It's always a pleasure.
All right, take care. That was TJ Campbell with the Tire Rack. We're going to take a break, and when we come back,
Quiz time.
Questions or comments?
Drop us a line at carstuff@consumerguide.com.
That's carstuff@consumerguide.com.
Did you know the Chicago Auto Show offers much more than just cars? Every year there's something new to experience, and 2025 is no different. This year, take a thrilling ride on one of two indoor mountain climbs with either Ford or Jeep and decide who conquers the challenge best. Come experience the latest electrified vehicles on two indoor tracks where you'll feel the power and performance. Take a trip into the national parks and adopt a dog with Subaru. Dream about a lavish lifestyle at the Supercar Gallery. Get behind the wheel to test drive vehicles on city streets. And don't miss new exhibits at the show, like Overlanding Chicago or the Family Zone. Join us for an indoor run, craft beer tasting, career day, and so much more. It's an experience you won't forget. The Chicago Auto Show, February 8th through the 17th at McCormick Place. Find out more and buy tickets online at chicagoautoshow.com.
I'm Robert Colangelo, host of The Green Sense Show. Every week, we feature groundbreaking innovations from energy and agriculture to smart cities and sustainable transportation. We interview experts working to create a cleaner, greener future. One of my favorite segments is Green Automotive News with auto expert Tom Appel. We test drive and review the latest EVs, hybrids, and ultra-efficient cars. Visit greensenseshow.com or listen to The Green Sense Minute on 105.9 WBBM Chicago.
Welcome back to the Car Stuff Podcast.
We are back. This is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast, coming up on quiz time. But first, Jill wants to talk about social media very, very briefly.
My turn.
Clock is ticking.
The clock is ticking. Got it. Yeah. And we're just checking, make sure we're still recording. But yes. I'm on all of the things, as I like to say. So my primary social media is TikTok, I would say, but Instagram, YouTube, Threads, Blue Sky.
Foursquare.
No longer Foursquare.
MySpace.
I felt that was a little bit privacy invading. I don't think they call it Foursquare anymore. I did have a MySpace account.
Does it still exist?
I think they call it something else, and I feel like it's
Buzz
something.
Could you be like the mayor of it or something?
You could. And I used to check in when I was doing marathon training. I was like the mayor of like one of the hills that I would run. So I'm on all the things at Jill Simonello, and I use the hashtag car du jour. So Simonello can be a little bit hard to spell. So you can find me on pretty much any social medium that exists with car du jour.
All right.
Yep.
That's done?
That's all the things.
Okay, I can pay attention again.
You can pay attention.
It's quiz time.
Okay.
Great topic today.
You always think that.
No, this one's good.
Okay.
Where was it built? I'm going to give you a vehicle, and then I'm going to give you two locations. You just have to tell me which one is the place it was built. Have a donut.
I'm going to have a donut so that
cinnamon
I can stall.
Twists.
Yes,
today.
Cinnamon twists. I do enjoy cinnamon twists.
All right, are you ready?
I am ready.
I think you're going to find this very entertaining.
Uh-huh.
The Mercedes-Benz G-Wagon.
Okay.
Lovingly known as the Geländewagen.
I was going to say Gewürztwagen, but I don't know.
Gewürztwagen?
I don't know. I made that up.
You did?
I did. It's
that sounds like sausage wagon.
It's like...
But that's, for people who don't know, it's the very paramilitary looking vehicle that people pay way, way, way too much money for.
Mm-hmm.
They now start at, was it 100, and I had this down someplace, like 140 grand.
Mm-hmm.
But it's crazy talk. Just get a Mercedes crossover. It'll be much happier. Actually, this is what we were just talking about. This is kind of a serious off-roader, but they do a performance version with street tires.
I was going to say, if you want a G-Wagon, go buy an Ineos Grenadier.
That is a better way to spend your money.
Yeah.
It's also roomier.
Yeah, and it looks cool, and it's new, and nobody else has it.
Yeah, so the G-Wagon.
Yeah,
is
okay.
That built in Graz, Austria, or Tuscaloosa, Alabama?
I'm going to go with Austria.
It is.
Yeah.
You're on the board.
Woohoo, I have a point!
It's built there by Magna, huge Canadian parts maker, Magna. Big part of the auto industry. And they've had this plant in Graz for a long time, Magna Steyr. That's the plant that has built such vehicles as the Jaguar I-Pace and the Fisker Ocean. They're a contract manufacturer.
Okay, yep.
But makers love things like this because it's more easier to allocate space in your plants if you have an outside contractor who's really good at like adjusting to volume.
Yes.
So there you go. You got that one.
Woo!
You know what's also built there now? The Z4, the BMW Z4 and the Toyota Supra. Are built by Magna in Graz, Austria.
When the Z4 was built in the United States. Is it still built at all in the United States?
No, not this generation.
Hmm. Okay.
All right, there you go. You have 1 point.
I've got a point. Did you explain the rules?
Nope. There are 6 questions, 5 regular questions, 1 bonus question. You need 3 total to win.
And I have how many points?
You have 1.
I have 1. How many questions have we
asked? That one was so easy, though. It almost doesn't count. It's like
0.9. It was easy.
All right.
Yeah.
Ready?
Mm-hmm.
Toyota Camry, Georgetown, Kentucky, or Bangor, Maine? Bangor, Maine, home of the Stephen King House.
Maine. I don't. I could be completely wrong, but I have never heard of a vehicle being built in Maine.
Hmm.
I could be wrong.
You could be.
I could be wrong. I'm going to go with
Georgetown, Kentucky.
I'm going to go with Kentucky.
Georgetown, Kentucky is home of Toyota Motor Manufacturing Kentucky. That plant's been building Camrys since like 86.
Woohoo!
You have 2 points. I'm going to write that down. Two points.
You did not.
I don't think you've lost a quiz this year. You've come real close.
I've come very close.
All right. Here's an easy one.
Okay.
Ram ProMaster. That's
not
Ram's
easy.
Big commercial van.
Mm-hmm.
Kansas City, Missouri, or Saltillo, Mexico? Kansas City. They make steak there.
And they have really good barbecue.
That's what I hear.
I went to college in Kansas City.
I'm pretty sure I've had drinks in Kansas City, but I'm not positive.
And you know who did not win the Super Bowl yesterday? Kansas City.
There you go.
Yeah. Okay.
Topical.
What vehicle, Ram ProMaster, and you're saying Kansas City?
The Ram ProMaster, big commercial van.
Or Mexico.
Or Mexico. Kansas City or Saltillo, Mexico?
I honestly don't know the answer to this. I'm going to say Mexico.
It is.
Okay.
Kansas City, Missouri is where they build the Ford F-150. Different company.
Completely different.
Yep. So you've won.
I did. So we should just end now.
If we can. We have 8 minutes.
I can talk about running for 8 minutes.
I don't think I want to ad lib for 8 minutes.
I could talk about running. I'm going to start training for a half marathon.
I think we should finish the quiz.
Okay.
Oh, man, I didn't write down the answer, and I'm not sure I know. Where was the Nissan Titan built?
Oh.
That would be Nissan's big pickup truck.
Yeah.
And Nissan, like so many companies, wanted a chunk of that big, profitable half-ton pickup market. And they've discontinued building it.
Yeah, do you have options, or you don't even have options?
I do, but I'm trying to find the answer. Is it Canton, Mississippi, or Smyrna, Tennessee?
Oh, I wasn't going to say either of those. Let me know when you found the answer.
You just think out loud.
Okay. Okay, so you said Tennessee or...
It's Canton, Missouri, or Smyrna, Tennessee. I now know the answer.
You know the answer.
Yeah. I'll give you this clue. Those are both Nissan plants.
Are they?
Yeah. Well, one of them could have been fake.
I'm going to go with Tennessee.
No. That was Canton.
Okay.
Yeah.
They
also built the, if you remember, the NV van.
Mm-hmm.
Large van that was based on the pickup.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Nissan had this plan to do an entirely... like a big commercial thing.
Mm.
And you would want to do that because Ford is totally kicking ass in that segment.
Mm-hmm.
Like they own commercial deliveries.
Did you ever get the NV test car that was a taxi cab?
I did, the NV 200.
Yeah.
Now that you've mentioned it, I will post my review of that.
Yeah. I just
That was fun.
It was fun. I didn't like people kept hailing me. Did anybody hail you?
I don't think so, but also I ignore people. So,
I tend to ignore people as well, which is why I didn't stop. But I could have made some money that week.
I would just roll down the window and throw a straw wrapper at them. All right. You have three. You just got one wrong. We got one last one. Are you ready?
Okay.
Where is the Cybertruck built?
Ooh.
Austin, Texas or Fremont, California?
Hmm. I think I know this one.
Uh-huh. Pixar, it didn't happen.
I think it is Austin, Texas, because Kristen Shaw, who we had on the episode a couple episodes ago.
Talking about Toyota quietness.
Talking about Toyota quietness. She lives in Austin.
Okay.
And her neighbor works.
So she's like a liberal.
I don't know.
An Austin thing.
Because it's weird. You're keeping it weird.
Austin's weird because you get a lot of liberals that eat barbecue.
Yeah.
Weird. It's a very...
But one of her neighbors works for Tesla and owns a Cybertruck.
Okay.
So that is 100% why I'm saying Austin, Texas.
It is Austin, Texas.
Okay.
That's the new Gigafactory, Texas.
Okay.
That builds only the Cybertruck and the Model Y.
Okay.
Which might be their two-volume vehicles right now. No, the Model 3 sells more than the Cybertruck. Fremont, California, Tesla's first big factory... Mm-hmm. Used to be the NUMMI factory. Do you remember NUMMI?
I do.
New United Motor Manufacturing Incorporated, which was a Toyota General Motors cooperative. And since I looked this up, I have to read it.
Okay.
Things they used to build there included the Geo Prism, the Toyota Tacoma, and the Pontiac Vibe.
So I was just doing video this morning for my TikTok channel. I was driving a Land Rover, Range Rover Sport, and I was playing with the parking function, and I literally parked in front of a Pontiac Aztec.
Did you?
Yeah.
Aztec's not so rare. Like, that's one of those vehicles that should have been a commodity vehicle that would get used up. But at some point, people started collecting them early in that process. Well, they're weird and they're a little strange looking. But, but you know, the Buick Rendezvous, which was its companion, its chassis companion, also pretty damn ugly.
That is correct.
It's an ugly, ugly vehicle.
It is.
That's sold in some volume. They're everywhere. People who have Buick Rendezvous are taking care of them. And I don't know why, because they were not good. All right, you got 4 out of 5. You ready for the bonus question? You actually asked me to do a question about Burger King.
Did I?
Or Spain? I can't remember.
Probably Spain.
Well, okay, but today we're talking about Burger King in Spain. Do you know how many Burger Kings there are in Spain?
No.
Give a guess.
10,000.
No. Do you want to guess again?
Nope.
The answer is fewer than that.
5,000.
No, about 650. There are 19,000 Burger Kings globally, which is a lot of stores. But 650 is a good number.
Okay.
Yeah, for people who should know better than to eat a Burger King. I need you to tell me which of the following is not on the Burger King Spain menu. Are you ready? Gouda rings, the King Nugget vegetables, the brutal the brutal bacon double crispy. I think the word burger goes after that. Or the King Turkey Club.
Okay, the King Turkey Club seems way too healthy to be on that menu. But I want the Gouda rings.
That was my first thought when maybe I made this up.
Yeah, I want those.
Yeah.
If those don't exist, they should.
Yeah, they should exist here.
They should exist here.
We're 6 inches from a Burger King. I guarantee you they don't have Gouda rings.
Do they have mozzarella sticks?
They
maybe?
Do.
Okay.
They're not good.
I couldn't tell you the last time I ate it.
Do you know who has the worst onion rings in the world? Burger King. They're terrible.
Okay.
Like, if someone offered you one just for free, you're like, nah.
I'm good.
Not worth the calories.
Got it.
I need an answer. Gouda rings, King Nugget vegetables, Brutal Bacon Double Crispy, or the King Turkey Club. One of those is fake.
Well, it's either going to be the vegetables, so number 2, or the last one.
The King Turkey Club.
Yeah, because that's way too healthy. I feel like that's... But then you have, like, the veggie things. Which one of these is not like the other? Yeah, I got to go with the last one. It's too healthy.
You're correct. There is no King Turkey Club in Spain. You've been killing it on the bonus questions. All right, real quick. We got something in the mail. These people called me. I don't know anything about this yet.
Okay.
But we just received our free fur zappers.
Okay.
They're lint zappers. There's one for you, one for me, lint zapper. We'll try those out. I don't know how they work yet. But does your husband shed?
No.
My wife doesn't either, so I need my daughter to use this.
I shed.
My daughter has a dog.
Okay.
That does shed. I know this.
Okay. My sisters have cats.
Anyway, if we like these, we'll talk about them. They're from the folks at furzapper.com, the lint zapper.
Okay.
All right.
I will definitely take this with me the next time I go to Indianapolis. My sisters have cats.
All right. Remember, we if they're good, we'll mention them.
Okay.
All right. And here's the thing about that. Why don't people want us to test watches?
Like an Apple Watch. That would be great to test. Because then I could talk more about running.
Well, that would be great.
Wouldn't it, though?
All right. We ran out of time. Big thanks to TJ Campbell of the Tire Rack. Thank you, Jill. Thanks to producer Andy. And local folks, be sure to catch the Chicago Auto Show, which is on until Monday.
Yes.
All right.
Next Monday.
Let's talk about cars again.
Next week.
Next week.
Remember to check us out at consumerguide.com.
The Car Stuff Podcast is produced by J-Turn Media.
To advertise on the show, please drop us a line at carstuff@consumerguide.com.